Welcome to VersaVoice, the Daily Breadcast.
And hello, everyone.
And welcome to you, specifically. We've tailored this deep dive just for you.
That's right.
Today, our whole focus, really, is zeroing in on one incredibly significant chapter, Genesis chapter 4.
Just that one chapter, but wow, there's a lot in there.
Oh, absolutely. This is where we get the story, the foundational story of the first brothers, Cain and Abel.
And, well, the events that unfold between them, it sets quite a precedent.
It really does. We're going to try and unpack this, not just retell it, obviously, but explore these really raw themes, jealousy, anger.
Divine favor or the lack of it.
Exactly. And consequence. It's all packed right into Genesis 4.
It's actually pretty striking how much of the sort of human condition is laid bare in just these few verses, almost like a blueprint.
Yeah, like the primal struggles are right there at the very start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's set the scene like Genesis 4 does. We meet Cain first.
Right. He's a tiller of the ground, works the earth.
And then there's his brother, Abel.
Who's a keeper of sheep, tending flocks. So, different livelihoods from the get-go.
Two paths, yeah. Early days of humanity.
And this difference, it becomes important pretty quickly when they both bring offerings to God.
Right. So Cain brings, what does it say, some of the fruits of the soil.
Some, yeah. Whereas Abel, he brings fat portions from the firstborn of his flock.
Fat portions from the firstborn. That sounds deliberate. Maybe more costly.
It does suggest perhaps a greater value placed on it, maybe within that pastoral context, or maybe pointing to the quality, the best part.
And here's where it just takes that sharp turn, the part that, well, people have puzzled over forever.
The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering,
mm-hmm.
but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor.
Can you just imagine offering up your work, your labor, and it's rejected? Or at least not seen the same way, the turmoil that must have sparked.
Mm, that's really the core of the tragedy, starting right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the text, it doesn't explicitly say why God favored Abel's. That lack of explanation is key.
It really is. Because that perceived unfairness, that comparison.
It plants the seed, doesn't it? For resentment, for feeling wronged when someone else seems favored.
It makes you wonder what Cain was feeling inside. Was it just disappointment or something? Darker, taking roots straight away.
Well, we see the outward sign immediately.
Right. He becomes very angry.
And his face was downcast. You can just picture that sullen look.
Yeah, that shift in demeanor. And then, and this is so important, God engages with him directly.
Doesn't just leave him stewing.
No. He asks him, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast?
It feels less like an immediate judgment and more like an invitation to look inward.
Yeah, like, think about this, Cain. What's going on inside you?
Exactly. And then comes that really profound principle, so enduring.
If you do what is right, will you not be accepted?
Right. But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door.
Wow. That image. Crouching.
It desires to have you, but you must master it.
Such a powerful statement about human agency, right? And this potential for darkness within us.
It portrays sin not just as some outside force, but as like an internal inclination, a temptation that's always there, waiting.
But crucially, one we can master. We have that capacity.
Yet tragically, Cain doesn't. He doesn't take that counsel.
No.
Yeah.
The narrative is just so stark then. It says Cain spoke to Abel, his brother. We don't even know what he said.
Just that they talked. And then when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and struck him down.
The first murder. Just like that, born from that initial rejection, that anger he didn't master. It's chilling.
Utterly pivotal. And God's question afterwards is just as impactful.
Where is your brother Abel?
And Cain's answer. Oh, it's infamous. I don't know.
That denial. And then.
Am I my brother's keeper?
That phrase. It speaks volumes, doesn't it? About his state, his attachment.
It shows just how far he's fallen. Not just the act, but this complete denial of responsibility, of connection. What does that say about how he saw his brother,
That defensiveness. Yeah, it's so telling. And the punishment that follows, it connects right back to the crime.
Yeah. God says, what have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground.
The ground itself bears witness.
Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood.
So the very earth he worked
is now against him. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you.
Wow.
You will be a restless wanderer on the earth.
That consequence feels so fitting in a terrible way. His violence affects his whole relationship with creation.
Yeah, that interconnectedness is powerful. And being a restless wanderer, it's such a profound loss of place, of belonging, a total disruption.
And Cain's reaction to this is also really interesting.
He cries out, right?
Yeah, my punishment is more than I can bear.
Mm.
Today you are driving me from the land and I will be hidden from your presence.
There's fear there, definitely.
I will be a restless wanderer on the earth and whoever finds me will kill me.
It feels a bit like self-pity, perhaps. More focus on his own plight than maybe the full weight of what he did.
That's a good point. He's focused on the consequences for him.
And yet, in response to that fear, God does something, well, unexpected.
Mark of Cain.
He puts a mark on him so that no one who found him would kill him.
And promises sevenfold vengeance if they do.
Right, which is complex. People debate that mark endlessly, but it seems to show God's concern for preserving life, even Cain's life.
Raises big questions. Justice, mercy, the value of life itself, even after such a terrible sin.
Absolutely.
And then as the chapter closes, Cain leaves. He departs from the Lord's presence.
Settles in the land of Nod, which means wandering, east of Eden.
And we get that little note, he knew his wife, she conceived, bore Enoch.
And Cain built a city, named it after his son.
It's almost jarring, isn't it? Life just goes on. Civilization starts, even in exile, under the shadow of this violence.
That sort of understated continuation, it highlights humanity's story moving forward, even after immense tragedy. The consequences are huge, they linger, but it's not the absolute end. There's resilience, maybe, though definitely a scarred resilience.
Yeah, that's well put. So wrapping up this deep dive, just focused on Genesis 4.
Wow, we've seen so many firsts.
First sibling conflict, first murder.
First experience of, you know, divine favor and rejection. The whole concept of sin as this force to be wrestled with, to be mastered.
In the first exile.
Yeah.
The consequences spreading out.
It's amazing how much theology and just raw human experience is crammed into this single chapter.
And what's really thought-provoking, I find, is how these dynamics, these ancient struggles, they just keep echoing, don't they, in our own lives and society.
Oh, definitely. Envy, uncontrolled anger, trying to figure out fairness and justice.
These aren't just ancient history problems. They feel very current.
They really do. Mm. So for you listening, as you think about this deep dive into Genesis 4, maybe consider this.
Mm-hmm.
What does this foundational story reveal to you about the parts of human nature that seem to stick around?
Yeah, what does it say about how we relate to each other and maybe to the divine? And what might be the lasting echoes, you know, the ripples from these very first acts of brother against brother still felt in our world today?
It's short, this chapter, but it gives such a profound and, yeah, unsettling glimpse into who we are.
Something to definitely keep thinking about.